Madam Clerk, could you advise, do we have a quorum?
Yes, we do.
Great, thank you. With that, I will call to order this Orange County Water District Water Issues Committee meeting for February 8th, 2023. We'll begin with the Pledge of Allegiance. If you'll all rise and face the flag, hand over your heart, and please follow me. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States
of America
and to the Republic for which it
stands,
one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Madam Clerk, would you please conduct the roll call?
Roll call, Director Whitaker.
Here.
Director Nguyen.
Here.
Director Yeo.
Here.
Director Tran. Director Rowe.
Here.
Director Bilodeau. Director Sheldon. Director Here. Meeks. Oh, thank you. Director Meeks. Director Amezcua.
Present.
Director Green. You do have a quorum.
Thank you. Are there any items received too late to have been agendized?
There are none.
Thank you. It's time for visitor participation. Time is reserved at this point in the agenda for persons wishing to comment for up to 3 minutes to the board of directors on any item that is not listed in the agenda, but within the subject matter of the district. Are there any individuals present who wish to speak?
I do not see any hands raised.
Yes, hearing none, we'll move on. The consent calendar contains items number 1 through 7. Any members of the committee wish to pull a consent calendar item, or I would entertain a motion?
I'll move it.
Moved by Director Rowe.
I'll second.
Thanks. Second. With that, would you please conduct the roll, Madam Clerk?
Sure. Roll call, Director Whitaker.
Aye.
Director Nguyen.
Yes.
Director Yeo.
Yes.
Director Rowe.
Yes.
Director Sheldon. Director Amezcua.
Yes.
Okay, that motion carries with 5 yes votes.
Great, thank you. At our matter for consideration this morning, number 8, conditional approval for feasibility study and authorization to request proposals for South Basin Groundwater Protection Project, CEQA evaluation.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. And we'll have, I think we'll have Roy Herndon do this one this morning.
Actually, General Manager Marcus, we'll be having Project Manager Bill Lever presenting this.
Oh, as I said, we'll be having Project Manager Bill Lever present this this morning to the committee. Bill.
Good morning, Bill.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you for having me here. So the South Basin Groundwater Protection Project, the last time we gave the board an update was last year, actually last June of 2020, when the remedial investigation and feasibility study, remedial investigation report was completed. So the milestone we're going to cover today is the completion of the feasibility study. I hope everyone can see my screen. If you can, nod or acknowledge, or you don't see it yet. There we go. Everyone can see it?
All good.
Good.
Yes, we can see it. Thank you.
Terrific. Thank you. So to catch everybody up, a little bit about the South Basin. The South Basin study area is along the 55 freeway corridor, just north of John Wayne Airport and between the 5 freeway to the north and the 405 freeway to the south. I'll draw your attention to the map on the right-hand side of this slide. What is shown here is a groundwater contamination plume. Comprised of VOCs, perchlorate, 1,4-dioxane, and hexavalent chromium. The black outlines with the hash marks are source sites of the contamination. And you'll see a number of wells within the slide labeled IRWD5 or SAM123. The red wells are groundwater production wells, and the magenta colored wells are monitoring wells that the district has installed to define the extents of this groundwater contamination plume. The plume roughly is about 2 miles long from north to south, and it's about a mile wide. And you can see with the blue arrow there, groundwater roughly flows from a north to south direction in this area. So we first detected VOCs in the groundwater at IRWD well 3, which is shown here, at very low concentrations. IRWD well 3 pumps from the deep or the principal aquifer system, roughly 400 to 500 feet below the ground surface. The contamination all exists within what we call the shallow aquifer system, and it exists to a depth of about 100 feet in the shallow aquifer. And these district investigations, by the installation of these SAM wells and several hundred CPTs or cone penetrometer tests, have effectively defined the extent of this plume. So a brief catch up on the chronology. We've already touched on in the late 90s, IRWD detected VOCs, particularly TCE and PCE in IRWD well 3. That started the district's investigation of the contaminants and the sources of the contaminants in 2006. And that was actually when the board first took an action on the project to issue a contract to a consultant to determine the source sites and led the district into their investigation activities. So in 2007, the report came out identifying the source sites. And then we began a series of field investigations and the initiation of a preliminary remedial investigation report, which was completed in 2015. That report identified a number of data gaps, which then prompted a new set of monitoring wells to be installed. And those are the SAM wells 7 through 13, which were installed in the southerly portion of that plume at multiple depths. That data then led to the finalization of what we call the supplemental remedial investigation report, which was approved by the regional board and the DTSC in 2020. And then we began our feasibility study of identifying remedial actions to address the contamination. That brings us to where we are today, which is the finalization of the feasibility study, the initiation of a remedial action plan, and the CEQA evaluation of the proposed project. And then beyond 2023 will just be the design and construction of the remediation system pending board's approval of the project. So to touch real quickly on a parallel track in this project, we have been initiating litigation for cost recovery efforts since about 2008. We are litigating against 23 responsible parties. 18 of those responsible parties have settled with us already. Ongoing litigation still exists or remains with 5 additional responsible parties. So the total settlements that we've received to date are approximately $30 million. Our total expenditures to date, less our OCWD labor, are approximately $26 million. Obviously, and then the remaining settlements that are still available for the district to use are about $4 million. So what is a feasibility study? So the feasibility study primarily establishes our remedial action objectives. What are our goals of the project? We evaluate a number of remedial technologies to effectively address the contamination. Once we've evaluated those technologies, we come up with a list of remedial alternatives. And then we evaluate and score each of those alternatives based upon criteria established in the National Contingency Plan, which is an EPA established criteria for evaluating hazardous waste sites. So the six remedial alternatives that were evaluated are a no action alternative, which is a requirement of the NCP process. We evaluated monitored natural attenuation, groundwater extraction and treatment with disposal to either GWRS in the sewer. And then number four, the same groundwater extraction and treatment, but the treated water would be re-injected back into the aquifer. Alternative five was in situ chemical oxidation. And alternative six is a combination of groundwater extraction and treatment and in situ chemical oxidation with disposal of the groundwater extracted back to GWRS. So let's look real quickly at the alternatives we evaluated. And feel free to step in and ask any questions on any particular slide, and I'll be happy to answer those. So there are no slides.
Well, Bill, I have a question. You have
yes, Kelly.
An alignment of wells on MacArthur that yes. covers what, about almost a mile. What's the plan for the number of wells in that area? Looking at one figure to the other, there's a lot.
And yeah, then there's less. So first, I just want to make sure that we understand these dots do not represent wells. They simply are well alignments.
That's what I wanted to hear. Thank you.
Yes. Okay. Yeah, they're just showing the alignments for the groundwater extraction and treatment system. Although, Mr. Rowe, there are approximately 75 extraction wells that comprise alternatives three and four.
Thank you.
So you can see there are a number of alignments, eight to be exact. They are aligned north to south throughout the basin, and they effectively create containment zones of the contaminated groundwater. The feasibility study that the district has put forward only addresses offsite groundwater, or what we call operable unit two. Operable unit one is the groundwater that exists beneath the source sites, which are the responsibility of the property owners or the responsible parties that have been identified in our litigation. So ideally, the source sites are cleaning up their on-site contamination. And our project is to make sure that the plume does not spread any further, either vertically or laterally, and that we reduce the contaminants in the groundwater. So as you can see, alternatives three and four have an approximate extraction rate of about 340 gallons per minute combined of all 75 wells. So it's not a large volume of water, but it does effectively capture the plume and mitigate further migration. So we're going to zoom in here on the northern portion of the plume, showing the alternatives three and four extraction well alignments. And the purpose of this is to show that there are source sites that are implementing remedial actions, either planned or existing. Those are highlighted by the various colors. The blue are planned groundwater extraction systems. The dashed blue here, and then the dark blue are existing groundwater extraction systems. And then the green are existing and planned in situ remedies at the source sites. And our extraction well alignments are designed the way they are to reduce the interference of our remedy with the existing or planned on-site remedies. And we'll jump down to the southern portion of the plume, showing the alternatives three and four well alignments. This slide shows the alternative five in situ chemical oxidation alignments. And in situ chemical oxidation, as opposed to groundwater extraction wells, pump groundwater, contaminated groundwater out of the ground. That water then is treated locally for VOCs and sediment and is discharged either to the sewer or reinjected. In situ chemical oxidation relies on the drilling and installation of probes or small diameter boreholes in very dense, densely spaced alignments to inject an oxidant. In this case, I can't remember the name of the oxidant off the top of my head, to basically break down the chemical, the VOCs in place. And then they, on a regular basis, we would go out and re-inject this same chemical oxidant into the groundwater in the various aquifer layers to again, break down these chemical contaminants. So the alignments are effectively the same, except for you can see there's a higher density of probes here in this dark red area, which are the highest concentrations of VOCs we have in the basin. And then the final alternative, alternative six, is a combination of groundwater extraction and treatment and ISCO, where essentially the alignments of groundwater extraction are the same as alternatives three and four, with the exception of this central area where we would be employing in situ chemical oxidation. Okay, so the NCP defines a number of criteria that each alternative is evaluated against. The two threshold criteria, meaning that if they don't meet the first two criteria, they're automatically eliminated as a standalone remedy. So they either have to be protective, they have to be both protective of human health and the environment, and they have to be in compliance with the ARARs, which are essentially the state and federal standards and regulations that apply to the particular project. The other criteria are called balancing criteria, and they are used to rank. So once they pass the threshold criteria, they are then used to rank those alternatives that that meet the two threshold criteria. And they include long-term effectiveness and permanence, the reduction of toxicity, mobility, or volume through treatment, short-term effectiveness, implementability, and cost. And we'll go through those here in this table. So you can see the red would be low scores and the dark green would be the highest scores. And so you can see alternatives one and two, and the alternatives are shown here in columns now against each of the NCP criteria. And they're ranked just one through five, and zero means they weren't ranked at all, so they weren't even considered because there is no action and under this particular. So it would just be we left the plume to do what it does. So I'm not going to go through each of these, but the areas that received the highest score were alternatives three and alternatives four. Any questions on this particular slide? Great. So we'll now go into a cost comparison. So each alternative was costed out, both on capital costs and annual O&M costs. And you can see the costs range from no dollars in the no action alternative up to about $58 million for alternative five. The alternative with the lowest total capital cost and the lowest annual O&M costs are alternative three, which is the groundwater extraction and treatment, with discharge to the sewer and ultimately to GWRS, where it is reused within the basin. The total capital costs here include both the preliminary design investigations and the design and construction of the treatment system. Okay, so our next steps. We are recommending are the procurement of a CEQA consultant to perform CEQA analysis, to prepare and circulate CEQA documentation and the proposed interim remedial action plan. So with board approval of alternative three for our remedial action plan, we will develop our IRAP. We'll hold our public meetings for the IRAP and CEQA. We'll receive and address our public comments, public and agency comments, and then we'll present our comments and responses to the board for consideration of approval of the CEQA and the IRAP roughly a year from now. Once the board approves that, we will go into a design and construction phase. So our staff recommendations are to select alternative 3, which is the groundwater extraction and treatment with discharge to sewer and GWRS as the tentatively identified preferred or remedial alternative. And that's subject to completion of our environmental documentation. In combination with that, we're recommending authorization of an RFP to our 3 on-call environmental consultants to prepare a programmatic CEQA compliance documentation of alternative 3. And with that, I will take any questions you might have.
Any questions or comments?
Director, yes, I have some comments. Appreciate the artistic nature that you have of all of these figures. Very colorful. I like the pastel colors. It's hard to pick and choose what makes best sense. I think monitored natural attenuation in discussions with Roy and others over the years. I understand the regional board was interested in pursuing that, but I discard that because it simply allows the contamination to remain and to simply degrade naturally with the microorganism set and the chemical reactions that are occurring in the soil. It's not really protective of the groundwater in the deeper aquifers, and it allows this to continue to spread. So I think your alternative to number 3 makes sense. It has made sense for a long time. And I agree with the staff's recommendations. I'll move this both 1 and 2. Thank you.
Thank you, Director. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
I was just going to respond. What I didn't state in the presentation, Director Rowe, was that we agree with your assessment on monitored natural attenuation. It does not meet the threshold criteria, so it wasn't considered a standalone remedial alternative.
Well, the follow-up question I have is, all right, you have the initial capital cost of about $14.5 million, and then the annual cost of a little over $1 million a year. How long do you think this system would be operating?
The feasibility study evaluated a 30-year remediation period.
Yeah, that's a good time frame, but we need to get the cost from the polluters who did this rather than us burden the bill. What do you think the chances are getting a full compensation from these responsible parties?
I'm going to kick that one to Roy.
Our litigation is ongoing, as Bill mentioned, and we are anticipating that we should be getting additional either settlements or court awards as we go forward. So it's hard to say what we're going to be getting, but we do anticipate getting additional funds through the litigation beyond what we've received thus far.
Oh, fair enough. Thank you.
I'm looking for any other individuals with questions or comments.
Doug Reinhart and Paul Schoenberger have their hands raised.
Oh, sure. Mr. Reinhart, go ahead, please.
Thank you, Mr. Whitaker, Chairman Whitaker. My question is, you said you had about $4 million left. Bill or whoever, what do you expect? You're talking about construction starting in probably a couple of years. So at that point, assuming no other funds come in, how much of that $4 million do you expect to have left?
Well, the preliminary design investigation, which is essentially putting in test wells, because So far, what we've done is groundwater modeling to estimate how much production we're going to need, how much extraction, what the rate should be, and the spacing of wells. But what we really need to do in this next phase of work is to actually put in some test wells and do some aquifer testing to see what flow rates we really need to get, see how the aquifer responds. So that works about $3 million. So that will use up a good chunk of the $4 million. And then beyond that, it will be the full design and construction of the project. So again, I'm anticipating that we're going to be getting some more money through the litigation. I just don't know, you know, how much it's going to be. It could cover all of the rest of the capital and then some of the O&M potentially. So, but that's, you know, that's a process that has a lot of twists and turns but so far so good, on as to where we are in the litigation.
Yeah, Roy, I guess you don't know. I mean, you not only do you not know how much, but you don't know when that comes in. So I was just curious if you would be having to dig into your own funds, before that comes to fruition. So, because you're talking about construction starting in a couple of years, right?
Yes, provided that property access goes relatively smoothly. That's one of the wild cards, because these facilities are going to be probably largely constructed on, to some degree, public property, but we're going to try to stay out of busy streets and things. So I think we're going to have to be approaching local property owners and negotiating access agreements with them. That's going to take time and probably some money. So that is the one thing that could delay full construction.
Thank you.
Yes, Madam Clerk, again, who is requesting?
Paul Schoenberger.
Yes, Mr. Schoenberger, please. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Yeah, just to put a little bit of a finer point on Director Rowe's question about the costs and the litigation and all, you know, this has been going on for a long time. I looked at your past board actions, and the first one was in 2006. So, yeah, you guys have, I think, very diligently been looking at this and monitoring it and have come up with a really good solution, you know, so would be supportive of that, definitely. And maybe I'm, you know, don't have all the numbers together. I read the board memo. It says that we've received $30 million in fees, you know, through the litigation, and that we've spent 24. If you look at the past board actions and what has been authorized for studies and for monitoring wells and whatnot, it's like between 3 and 4 million. So I'm assuming that the other 20 million that we've spent has gone to the contingency lawyers. You know, so maybe I'm wrong, but, you know, if that's the case, you know, the hope of getting more money from litigation, you know, a lot of that might be eaten up by the lawyers also. But, you know, maybe if we could get some clarity on that, that'd be good.
Yeah, I think you're just a little wrong, Paul. some of that money does go to the contingent fee lawyer. You're correct. But a majority of those costs are court costs, paying for experts, and you know, a lot of other associated costs that go along with the litigation. And you're right, this has been a long road. I mean, part of it is that the board adopted a policy probably about 10 years ago in contamination cases to follow the RIFS process. And what staff is bringing to the committee this morning is in essence a culmination of that process. So we've followed the guidelines, and we've followed the process, and I think We've always, or the board has always represented that once we've completed this process, that we would move forward with the project. And maybe this goes to a little bit of Director Reinhardt's comments, is we are marching along irrespective of the litigation, really, and moving forward. And what we want to do is we want to complete this project so that we can start remediating the contamination. That is our goal. And as Roy has pointed out, what he didn't say, I think there's about six defendants left, but one of them is the major polluter in the case. And we're thinking, and correct me if I'm wrong, Roy, but
no, that's correct.
But furthermore, we're anticipating that we should be able to, or the judge should be able to hear the case this summer. Is that right, Roy? As far as
we frame on the we are expecting a final ruling on the most recent phase of trial that took over a year. This summer.
Right. So the light is at the end of the tunnel, and it is, I'm sure you're well aware, and most people on this call, that litigation takes a long time. That's unfortunate. But as I said, the board established a policy. We're following that policy, and we will continue to march forward. And hopefully by the end of this year, we'll have a very good idea as to what the final settlement amount is.
Thank you.
I'm seeing no further hands on this. Is that correct,
Chris? Chair Whitaker, we have Directors Rowe and Sheldon with their hands raised.
Oh, great. Sure. Let's go with Director Sheldon first.
You're on mute, Director Sheldon.
Okay, I'm sorry. I'm working off my iPhone for audio. I do have some questions that would probably be better asked in dialogue during closed session, if we could do that before this goes to the board after the committee action.
Certainly.
Thank you.
Okay, Director Rowe.
Yes, thank you. I think it'd be good to put this in perspective. The total production expected from pumping the contaminated groundwater out of the area is about 350 gallons per minute. And as Roy described it to me, it's like treating 35 gasoline stations, where these would be fairly small diameter wells and small pipelines delivering water to the sewer system for treatment with GWS. So I think that's kind of good to point out. It's not that big of a system, but it will take a long time to clean up that area. 30 years may be short, it may be longer than that. However, I'd like to remind, I do have a motion to approve staff's recommendation. Thank you.
Yes, we do have a motion. There was a second as well, right, Madam Clerk?
I don't believe, I didn't hear a second if there was one.
Oh, okay. So.
I will second that. This is Director Nguyen.
Thank you, Director Nguyen. Okay, if there's no further discussion on this, would you please conduct a roll?
Roll call, Director Whitaker.
Aye.
Director Nguyen.
Yes.
Director Yeo.
Yes.
Director Rowe.
Yes.
Director Bilodeau.
Yes.
That motion carries with 5 yes votes.
And just as a point of clarification, Mr. Chair.
Sure.
Director Sheldon requested that we have a closed session at next week's board meeting. So what I would suggest is we'll agendize this item for after the closed session.
Oh, yes, that would make sense.
Okay.
So the action from this committee would be to forward our recommendation of support for option number 3 and to have that order in terms of how the full board acts upon the item. So that would be at our February 15th board meeting. And with that, are there any directors' announcements, reports, or comments prior to closing?
No hands raised.
Okay. Mr. General Manager, any announcements or reports?
No announcements or reports.
Well, thank you. Everyone have a great day, and this meeting is adjourned.